show! You have all made it to the dance. You have all made it.
Coming to you from the X-Access, it's John of All Trades with your host, John X.
Welcome to the John of All Trades podcast, episode 365. I'm your host, John X. Thank you for joining us. Glad to have you back once again. And this week, we welcome someone back to the show. Someone who was on the show early and someone who does something that I have always loved, respected, and appreciated. I welcome back Christopher Short, who is a Jeopardy super champ. And he is also currently the Quizmaster-in-Chief at Geeks Who Drink. It was like 9 years ago that I had Geeks Who Drink on the show. I did a whole Geek Month in advance of whatever Geek Bowl that was. So as I look back, he was episode 44? Fuck. And at the time, he was the head editor of Geeks Who Drink. Now, in the midst of the pandemic, the original founder, John Dicker, wanted to step aside. So Christopher decided to step in, and he has been leading the charge ever since. And on this week's show, we talk about the evolution of the pub trivia business. Because, think about this, going into the pandemic, all of a sudden, bars, restaurants closed. How are you going to do live trivia? They immediately started a Twitch channel, which is, to this day, responsible for the only time I've ever spent on Twitch for any reason. And they pivoted in really interesting ways. One of them is in a daily quiz game called Thrice. Now, ever since he alerted me to the presence of this, because Christopher and I are friends on Facebook, I can't stop playing it. It's 5 questions a day. You get 3 shots at answering it, so you get 3 different clues. If you get it on the first try, you get 3 points. Second try, 2 points. Third try, 1 point. And if you miss it, you miss it. But it's a great way of sort of scratching that same itch that if you love trivia, you're just kind of addicted to doing this. So we talk about that. We talk about their presence of online. We talk about how they've evolved from paper and pencil to like an app-based thing. And where he sees the company going. I mean, anyone who is a Jeopardy super champ is going to be pretty smart, wouldn't you think? And so to hear him talk about learning both church and state side of the business was really, really rewarding for me. He's just a super dude. I adore what he does. I love this company. And I'm in a place now where I was busy having kids, and I still have them. It's not like I sold them or anything. But in the process of having kids, you really don't go out that much. So I haven't played pub quiz in a while, and I'm itching to get back out there. This is as good an excuse as any. Additionally, one of the things I talked about last week in my episode with Jeremiah Ludeman, men are not good at getting together with each other. And this is a great clothesline upon which to hang a night out. Because, like, you're doing a thing. You're sitting there, you're doing your pub quiz, and it's just a fun way to kind of make things a little bit more diffuse. So anyway, great company, great dude, proud to bring you this episode. Couple of plugs for me first. If you're on the socials, you know what? If you're not on the socials, congratulations. Your life is probably a little bit richer. But if you are, follow me there. J-O-A-T pod is the handle. That's Facebook, Twitter, Snapchat, Pinterest, Instagram, Blue Sky, and Threads. Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram are probably going to be the best ones there. My episode previews go up on Mondays. New episodes drop on Wednesdays. And you can find all 365 plus episodes of this show at johnofalltrades.us, including number 44 with Christopher Short and the 3 others that I did all during Geek Month. That was January of 2015. Good God, looking at these pictures, I've aged extensively since then. But you know what? Who hasn't? We all have. It's the way it goes. Now then, let's get to episode 365 of the John of All Trades podcast, featuring Christopher Short. He is Quizmaster-in-Chief at Geeks Who Drink. He is doing his second tour of duty with me, and his episode starts right now.
Actually, so yeah, I am editing them. Oddly enough, my neighbor across the street gets 15 out of 15 on a worrying basis. This long I might need to do hard mode. But yeah, it's definitely a fun game. And, you know, I did kind of simulate some scores for sharing on Facebook purposes back in the early days.
Like, oh, gotcha.
Here's what I think I would have gotten if, you know, I hadn't just edited the question a few hours ago.
Yeah, if I didn't have the teacher's guide here to do it, like in that Simpsons episode. I will tell you just very candidly, I have yet to get 15 on a daily Thrice game yet. So
you're not supposed to be able to.
Okay, good.
That's really kind of the idea, is that it's, you know, it should be incredibly hard to get a zero, and it should be, you know, incredibly hard to get a 15. So
I think my top score is 13 at this point, which,
okay,
that was a good day.
That's very respectable. Yeah, for sure.
I love when it tells me that I'm in like the top 68% of the day's scores or whatever. I go, okay, well, that's not great. But, you know, hey, top almost 2/3 there, right?
Yeah, right. So, you know, it literally, and obviously it could be worse.
So welcoming back to the show, this is Christopher Short, who is now Quizmaster-in-Chief of Geeks Who Drink. And we're talking about the daily quiz game that they have called Thrice, which was recently brought to my attention by you. Thank you for that, by the way. I make it part of my daily sort of routine. I have now four games that I play in the morning, and they are Wordle. I play Loodle, which is Wordle, but with nothing but dirty words. And I've learned some really, really disgusting pornographic terms through that now, which I wish I could unknow, but I cannot. I play Framed, and then I play Thrice. So tell me a little bit about how Thrice evolved. Since we're doing this for the first time in 9 years, we have a lot to cover. May as well start with the most recent.
That's true. And of course, Thrice is inspired by a lot of those kind of daily quick casual games. They seem to be extremely popular these days. But it's also a great way to just kind of get our editorial voice into people's hands. You know, we love our pub quiz clients, but we are kind of limited in that way that, you know, for most of our existence, if you want to find out what we're about, you've got to be in a bar on a weeknight, which, you know, limits your audience to a certain extent. And, you know, we know that our approach to trivia is a lot more universal than that. We always say good trivia is for everyone. And that's where the idea for Thrice came from, although the material for Thrice, oddly enough, came from, we had it sitting around, because back in the early days of the pandemic, when we, you know, were not making a daily quiz, we had this idea for like a board game kind of thing that would have the same format where, you know, you get the most points if you guess it on one clue, and then it goes down to, again, hopefully you never get a zero, although, you know, it happens. So, you know, we had a few thousand of these questions, and, you know, it was pretty easy to repackage them into this thing that now, you know, thousands of people are playing every day and growing all the time, which is very, very edifying, gratifying.
Well, and so for anyone who hasn't played it, the basic premise is you get five questions and you get three clues with each one. So like there's an answer for each of the five questions, but you get three clues. If you get it on the first, based on the first clue, you get 3 points. You get it on the second clue, you get it, you get 2 points. And if you get it on the third guess, you get 1 point. And if you miss it all together, you get a very nice X there, which never feels great. But it's fun because, yeah, sometimes I'm like, yeah, I got it right away. And it's in that signature geek style that I always loved, which is, you know, it's not just what is the capital of Peru, right? Which is not, you either know that or you don't. But with geeks, the way you all phrase questions, you can kind of reason it out even if you don't know it. Like there's hints that can kind of drive you toward the answer if you're paying attention to the question properly, which I think is really cool and a unique writing style that you all have cultivated.
Yeah, exactly right. I mean, you know, one of our driving principles has always been if your honest answer to any question is, who gives a shit? And that probably wasn't a very good question, you know. Like, we want to make sure that you, you know, if you get it right, that you still learn something, and if you get it wrong, then you feel like you almost got it right on every single question. And then on Thrice, we have this extra layer of the clues accumulate. So that's a fun little extra editing challenge of like, okay, if I put this 3-point clue together with the 2-point clue, you know, then I can kind of, you know, that's the decoder ring lines up sometimes. So
that's well stated, because I did not know in Iceland there was a museum dedicated solely to the penis.
Yeah.
And so that was something that I learned, and I go, okay, that's interesting. I did not know such a museum existed, and I maybe my life is better for having known that. I don't know.
Have you played Thrice today, John?
Yes.
All right. So, well, then you'll get it right. But I think the first question today was a great example of that sort of like, you know, that screen door effect where you put the clues together and you get it. Because the first question for 3 points, a Raise the Bar rally in 2010, urged what food company to work toward fair trade certification?
You know what my guess was for that? It was Nestle.
Okay, there you go. So, you're in the right frame of mind. Of course, fair trade, you think of, you know, kind of crops that come from tropical areas, right?
Sure. Yeah, you think coffee, you think...
Nestle does coffee and does chocolate. But then the second question was, the second clue was, founded in 1903, what Pennsylvania company town was the birthplace of U.S. soccer star Christian Pulisic?
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, so those two things, those are two very different types of clues that,
yeah,
you know, what you want. If you're thinking about it critically, there's like a Venn diagram there of fair trade products and then what company is headquartered in Pennsylvania. You go, oh, okay, so that's why I got 2 points on this, because the answer is obviously Hershey.
Exactly right. And there you go. You played the question exactly as you were supposed to. I'm always glad when I see the statistics and see that the most common score on any given question is 2.
Yeah.
So exactly average, right down the line. That's what we're aiming for. Yeah. The 1 point clue ideally is more like a safety net to make sure that you don't walk away empty handed, right?
Right. So in this case, I'm looking at the quiz again today, and it says Las Vegas, Times Square, and Niagara Falls all have Chocolate World visitor centers run by what company? So there you go. You line these things up. Fair trade, Pennsylvania company, Chocolate World. By that point, yes, the answer should be fairly evident to you.
Exactly. If you don't know it at that point, you know, that's fine, too. There are 4 other questions, right?
But right,
that's always what we're aiming for. And hopefully, you know, probably most people don't know the thing about Christian Pulisic. So, you know, even if you got it on that point, you know, he's the best U.S. soccer player, men's soccer player right now. So,
yeah, unless you're a Christian Pulisic, you know, super fan.
Right, exactly.
And maybe you are.
Filthy. Yeah.
You know, who knows? But
I do love my men's team. Yep.
Well, yeah. I mean, I can't say that I'm a soccer super fan, but I will say every 4 years I am pulling for the U.S., even though they weren't in the last World Cup.
That was 2 ago now. Thank you very much. We made it to the knockouts in Qatar.
Okay, my mistake. And I would expect the quizmaster in chief to have that type of knowledge right on deck. So my question to you is, before I get to the question, first of all, I'd like to say during the pandemic, Geeks Who Drink is responsible for literally my only time on Twitch that I have ever spent.
Is that right?
Because, yep, I missed pub quizzes. We were all going crazy in our home, so we played it with some friends. That ended up going by the wayside because one friend's asshole kid wouldn't stop interrupting us, and it just became sort of not fun to do anymore. But sure. I remember thinking, I'm like, oh my God, how is a company like Geeks Who Drink going to survive where the entirety of your business, at least up to that point, and my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, but up to that point was centered in getting people together in restaurants and public venues that are now shuttered. So talk me through that. And then you shortly thereafter became Quizmaster in Chief, did you not?
No, absolutely. I mean, that was the net effect. Unfortunately, it was like a week after Geek Bowl, too. So
we
were incredibly fortunate that, like, we never heard of anybody. It almost feels surreal to remember now what the super early days of COVID-19 felt like. But you kind of assumed for a little while that anybody who got it was just going to die, right?
Like, right. That was,
and here we had just gathered 2,500 people in a fairly small room in Chicago with They Might Be Giants playing at Geek Bowl.
So, yeah, you had the potential to be a super spreader event.
Exactly right.
Yeah,
but thankfully,
funny.
That never happened. Or if it did, we never found out about it. They never pinned it on us.
They were busy blaming other nerds for other nerd crimes, apparently.
Right. And then the next week, yeah, everything shut down. I mean, you know, essentially all of our revenue went away overnight. And, you know, we were all laid off and all that kind of stuff. It was obviously a traumatic experience for everybody in the service industry. What I told I was chief editor at the time. And what I told my team then was, you know, this isn't just happening to us. This is happening to easily tens of millions of people. Someone's going to have to think of something. And then, so sure enough, you know, the small business loans came out, and that helped a great deal. But in the meantime, the interesting thing is our private events business didn't drop off much at all.
Huh.
That team had spent kind of the week in between Geek Bowl and and the shutdown, like they saw the writing on the wall and they figured out how to do the remote quizzing. And as many of those events that were on the books already, they, you know, tried to salvage by moving those online. And then they just kind of kept booking them. And of course, much like I'm sure Zoom stock skyrocketed.
Yeah.
Overnight, everybody knew about it. And at the same time, you know, now every, you know, morale person at every company is A, vitally important because morale is not great. And B, you know, they're scrambling to find something that they can do with their teams that doesn't require meeting in person. So yeah, they went from being like historically private events are something like 10% of our business. They went to being half of our business for a good long while then during the pandemic. You know, as the editorial team, yeah, we immediately moved on to, well, it was Twitch. And, you know, we stayed on the job and we started writing a quiz for, you know, we were laid off on a Monday and we got that first Twitch quiz up, I think on Tuesday, maybe Wednesday of the same week. And, you know, we had our donation button and we got a few thousand dollars of donations because, you know, all those folks who had been planning, I suppose, to go spend that money at the bar anyway,
yeah,
and decided to spend it our way. So that showed us that, you know, our crowd hadn't gone anywhere. And, you know, of course, we were extremely grateful to have the opportunity to entertain people during what was a very difficult time.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember it was a godsend because I love geeks. The whole experience is always just really fun. And, you know, some of that is just the unique confluence of features that you all have, which is highly curated, well-written questions. And then when you find a quizmaster you like, you go there and you adore your interactions with them. And I've had a number of really great ones here in Denver that every time I go, I was always excited to like see them. And then you see your fellow teams. I remember we played a Geek Bowl one time. We were down in Austin. I can't remember which one this was, but our rival team from our home bar was there and we ended up edging them by 1 point. And so between rounds, they asked us like, "Hey, did you know who played the Wicked Witch in the Wizard of Oz?" And I go, "Yeah, it was Margaret Hamilton. That's my favorite movie." And so they go, "God damn it." And like that day in Austin on South Congress, I had bought a button of the Tin Man. And so they go, "Oh, okay, well, that isn't even fair." So the next week when we saw them in our regular quiz, our team name was Margaret Hamilton for the win. And,
sure.
And so anytime you can, you know, twist the knife on your competitors a little bit, that's super fun. So let me ask you, so you did Twitch for a while. I think you're still doing it, aren't you?
We are still doing it, yeah. There's still a segment of the audience that still likes to connect with us that way. And like I said, you know, our business depends on being able to be in a bar on weeknights, so anything we can do to...
Sure. When did it start to come back? When did quizzes start to come back in earnest? And when did you take over from John Dicker?
That question was the source of much anxiety for a long time. And, you know, kind of a lot of Zoom arguments and, you know, trying to be responsible. I don't think it's much of a secret to say the trivia world is fairly left-leaning and Geeks Who Drink is no exception. Because of that, of course, none of us wanted that blood on our hands, so to speak, right?
Right.
And so, and, you know, for a long time, we were, for instance, issuing microphones to quizmasters instead of to the bars, you know, like communally, or, you know, we were reimbursing for PPE, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But to answer the question, we started reaching out to our pre-pandemic clients around second quarter of 21,
mm-hmm,
which was right. I mean, I took over on January 1st of 21.
Okay.
You know, I don't blame John at all for wanting to step away at that point. It had been extremely traumatic for him as well. And
well, and how long had he done it at that point? I mean, what is that?
Yeah,
14
well,
years,
I mean,
something like that.
Yeah. So Geeks Who Drink under that name, I began at the beginning of 2006. So 15 years.
Jeez.
Yeah.
That well,
and I started as chief editor in 2010. So you know, I've already got 11 years in that role when I step up. And yeah, it's, you know, so I get it, right? My job as chief editor was, you know, obviously insulated from a lot of the stress that a CEO has. And, you know, even 11 years felt like a lot in that job, even with the lower stress levels.
Yeah. Well, and at that point, too, I mean, if you think about this almost in terms of, you know, newspapers, they talk about separation of church and state. At that point, you're more on the church side. When you took over and are now running both church and state in terms of the business of Geeks Who Drink, what kind of learning curve was that for you?
Wow. So the great thing about the learning curve and what flattened it out is that when we came back, you know, the full-timers that we brought with us, and this is before we start going back into bars, right? We just, we came back with about half the people that we had pre-pandemic. And naturally, those were the people who had the most tenure, the most institutional knowledge. That helped me out a great deal. You know, obviously, you're right. As editor, I just wasn't privy to really what most other departments were doing kind of at all, right? I didn't know the mechanics of their jobs. I understood what they contributed. And the learning curve also is a little bit flatter because none of us know what the new landscape is going to look like.
Sure.
None of us know how many of the old procedures would even still apply.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, we really, really got the opportunity to take a hard look at the things that we had done before. There were things that we already knew weren't working that we were able to, you know, jettison or overhaul. And then, you know, the same thing you do in any rebuilding process like that, you lean into the things that have worked and, you know, what you know about your industry, and then you adjust as things pan out or don't.
Sure. Well, as I look at the site and as, you know, as I revisit this, in my city alone, there are still, just based on a cursory search here, still just as many quizzes available to me in my area as there ever have been. So as you sit here in 2024, how is business for you? And are you back to pre-pandemic levels of prosperity? Or, you know, I don't know what shape the company was in there, but how do things compare now versus how they've been historically?
Well, of course, direct comparisons are always a little bit tricky. On the one level, I can say that like our top line is 70% back to where it was. But the way that we do things is substantially different. Like, you know, if you looked at the headcount from department to department, I mean, there are departments that didn't exist before. We have 4 people in our technology department, which did not exist, which was already a little bit, you know, I wonder how we survived without it, because we were already fairly tech dependent, being a 100% remote company that, you know, delivers a product to 1,000 quizmasters so that they can, we were essentially writing a script for 1,000 comedians we've never seen. a lot of technology involved in that. You know, we came out of the pandemic with even more technology. You know, we've switched from paper and pencil answer system to a digital answering system. And that's,
you know, I saw that. Talk to me about that decision, because when I was playing Geeks regularly, and having kids will derail your nighttime activities quite a bit, and my kids are now 7 and 9, so I don't get out nearly as much as I might like to. I remember there was a lot of concern about the integrity of the quiz, particularly, and that's why you used pencils and paper. And also, I would say it had the added benefit of forcing people to not look at their phones and actually have conversations with each other. So now you've gone to a digital system. Talk me through that decision and how has it been? And by the way, how does it even work? I'm ashamed to admit this. I haven't been to a quiz under the new format.
When I talk about being able to be in a bar on a weeknight, that's what I'm talking about, right? There's a reason why our core demographic is, you know, mid-20s to mid, maybe late 30s. And that's because those are just the people who can do it. I mean, there was never any question in my mind about it. I will put it that way. There are a lot of questions packed into that question.
Sorry.
For one thing, okay, so the cheating thing. I'll start there with the cheating thing. People have not reported any more cheating, I don't think, than they ever did before.
Okay.
And we always took those reports with a grain of salt in the first place because, you know, usually just the results don't really reflect the idea that anyone was cheating, right? Like, we can actually see the scores and the alleged cheaters seldom win. So, you know, maybe they were just doing something else innocent.
Sure.
So you're right. I mean, you know, the people who are, there's still a small minority of people who kind of wish we would go back to paper and pencils. And they kind of sometimes have that feeling that, you know, they're looking at screens the rest of their lives, and this is one place where they'd rather not. But obviously, you know, in every other way, it's just so much more convenient. And something else, because I'm a little bit geographically removed from our sort of big centers, I'm in West Central Indiana, I was pressed into service because we have a quiz in the next county, and I hosted for about 20 weeks in the fall of 2021 and got to see, you know, how it worked. And oh my gosh, it's so much easier for the quiz master. It's easier for the quizzers. You know, you don't have to run up with your answer sheet at the end of the round. Right. And the computer handles the first round of scoring. So all you got to do is kind of read behind and make sure that, like, okay, that spelling is close enough. I will accept that. Or
sure. I know what they're going for here, right? Like,
yeah, exactly right.
Because some people are just miserable spellers. I myself am an impeccable speller, so poor spelling just makes me insane. But like, I'll watch people, especially now that I have kids, and they'll come home. My daughter Sloane had a drawing of a princess that her friend drew her, and on top it says P-R-I-T-E. I had to look at it 10 times to realize she was trying to say pretty.
Yeah.
Right? So I'm like, oh, right, because it's a short I sound there, so pretty. And I'm like, why does it say prite? Like, what is this? Like, what is it? Did she just leave off a bunch of words for princess? What? So, but I go, oh, pretty. So there's like a fail safe. There's a human element where people type in their answers or whatever, but the quiz master can look at it and go, okay, I know what they're going for here.
Exactly right. And, you know, all that whole process takes really a few seconds as opposed to, you know, going through answer sheets the way that we used to do it. So
I remember that way. You'd watch the quiz master just furiously like checking answers and writing the number at the top and then entering it into a spreadsheet. It was a whole like production that they had to do there. That had to be stressful for quiz masters.
Exactly right. I mean, you know, I'd say we all got used to it, but
sure.
You know, there has to be a better way, and indeed there is. The other funny, the weird byproduct of it is that, you know, from my old writerly days, one of our favorite things to do for Geek Bowl was writing just the little interstitial joke slides that went up between rounds, and we would like usually just make fun of the city we were in with all these jokes that, like, you know, they kind of sound like factoids, but they're, you know, clearly we're just dragging the people who came out to see us.
So you're doing a little pro wrestling heeldom here, where
you
bag on the local sports team, you bag on. I interviewed Drew McGarry, who writes for Defector, and you know he's written for.
I love Drew.
So do I. Drew is amazing. But he told me Denver has a really bad resting odor. And I remember thinking, you bastard. but we do manufacture Purina dog chow in this city.
Yeah, there's that one spot on the interstate.
It's unpleasant.
If you get stuck there in a traffic jam, you don't want to.
Right between the oil refinery, the landfill, and the dog food factory. And you go, ah, yes, okay, well, I see what he might be talking about here.
Yeah, that's not the tourist district, for sure.
No, it is not.
But anyway, with our digital answering system, now we're actually able to, you know, keep those updated. We'll, you know, sort of riff off of this day in history kind of stuff. And we make these interstitial joke slides just for in between rounds of your daily quiz. If you happen to be looking at your phone instead of running to the bathroom or whatever, you know, we get a little bit of extra entertainment in there. And, you know, if we have a sponsor, we can sell some space there as well. But mostly we just use it for our own amusement. You know, that's always been part of our ethos as well.
Well, that's where a lot of the best shit comes from, is from people. You know, if you're trying to amuse yourself and your friends, that tends to lead itself to specificity. And as Roger Ebert said in his review of Brokeback Mountain, the more specific a thing is because it understands that it's for someone or for something or who these characters are, paradoxically, the more universal it becomes. So I love that as a guiding ethos. Like, what the hell? Let's just do this to make ourselves laugh. Maybe other people enjoy it, too.
Absolutely right. You know, at least we have proof that somebody likes it.
Sure.
You know, it's pretty practical from that point of view. If you're writing for some imaginary audience, then you have no idea if you're connecting with them because they're imaginary.
Then you're literally writing for no one.
Right? Yeah, exactly right.
So, yeah, you're trying to write. If you try to write for everyone, you are writing for no one. So as we
said, that was one of our long time editorial mottos as well, is always harebrained, never half-assed. So we'll take a big swing on a round concept. You know, we'll leave in the joke that only 1% of people are going to get because, you know, on a long enough timeline, you're going to put a joke in everybody's wheelhouse and they're all going to feel like you wrote it just for them. And that's a great way to build a loyal audience. And, you know, the proof's in the pudding.
That's a fantastic way of thinking about it, too, because there's a joke in one of Dimitri Martin's specials where he talks about the holes that they drill in Ritz crackers. And he goes, and thank God they have those holes because, you know, prior to that, maybe the cracker wasn't aerodynamic enough to get up to your mouth. Just, whew. And he goes, that joke never does well, but I love it, so fuck it, I leave it in. So yeah. I go, great, now it's my favorite joke too, just with that savor that you put on it, which is just terrific.
Yeah.
Okay, so as we sit in 2024, you've been at this now, you said, for 14 years. I mean, Jesus Christ, what's different for you as you look at quizzes now, because fundamentally the structure of the game is the same, although you do have different variants of the game now, from what I understand. What's different for you?
You know, that's a really good question. I mean, as far as the product goes, our editorial team is absolutely fantastic. They're extremely dedicated to coming up with new formats. You know, we like to test the programmers of the digital answering system because every time we come up with a new format, they've got to figure out a new configuration of possible answers to accommodate. So, you know, content wise, it's definitely gotten a lot more, I don't want to say complex, but sophisticated, you know,
sure.
Like just that's evolved a great deal. And of course the voice has as well. 2006 when Geeks Who Drink got started, you know, we're still kind of in the tail end of, you know, that kind of shock humor wave where you could just really kind of get away with any joke that you want. That hasn't been true for a little while. And for the record, we're better off as a species because of that. But you know, it's definitely changed. You definitely don't want to read much of our material from, you know, more than maybe 6 or 7 years ago anyway.
Well, I mean, there's an axiom that says if you don't look back on past version of yourselves and cringe at least a little bit, you're probably not growing enough. So, yeah. I mean, everything is a product of its time, no matter what it is. And if you don't look back on that and go, yeah, that's not me anymore because society is not that anymore. Like, that's okay. And, you look back on it, and if you judge it against the current sensibility, yeah, it's going to look terrible. But of its time, you go, okay, well, this was a product of the current environment. So, I'm with you on that.
Yeah, and ultimately, you know, if you have a public-facing job, basically that's just part of the gig, is you've got to evolve with the audience. We always want to be a little bit envelope pushy, but, you know, the envelope gets smaller and we have to as well. So, yeah, that's all part of the same conversation about, you know, the 1% jokes, too, right? Like, if you're not taking those risks,
yeah,
I don't know what you're doing, but it's not something that I want to be a part of.
Right. Yeah. If you're stagnating and if you're not growing, you're not changing, you're not trying, you're not pushing, then what's the point? I mean, yeah. You're essentially settling into, I've heard this referred to in terms of corporate work, but you're settling into slow, comfortable suicide.
Yeah.
Is more or less. Here's a question for you. As you read about trends, because you said your target audience is people in their 20s, probably to mid to upper 30s. One thing I've read about is that younger people are not going out at the clip that they once were. Is that a trend that you've seen? Is that accurate? And what are you doing to address it?
That's an interesting question and one that I'm not sure that I know the answer to, honestly. I mean, our audience numbers, we track those and they have been, I think, fairly consistent. That might be just a feature of the business that we're in, right? It could very well be that bars are struggling because when I think about going out, even as somebody who's comfortably older than that demographic and has kids, right? But yeah. I feel like even if those things weren't the case, I would probably be less likely, especially post-pandemic, to just go out for the hell of it. Like, you know, I'm going to go to the bar and have drinks, you know, with a friend, by myself, whatever. You know, that's not satisfying to me. But, you know, if I'm going to do something and then the drinking is kind of tangential to that, then, you know, that's what I would prefer.
I mean, what you're talking
about. Same reason why I don't like to go on beach vacations. It's like, you know, I've looked at the ocean for an hour now and, you know, it was novel. I am a landlocked person, but, you know, after an hour, It's just kind of there. And what are you going to do now?
Sure. I get it. Yeah. That is sort of the animating feature of what makes geeks geeks. It's like you're giving people a reason. It's like a clothesline upon which to hang a night out where you can.
And there are so few. I do all the time read about how, a slow, steady decline since like the 1970s of people having social groups. You know, they used to belong to maybe a fraternal organization and a church and, you know, another club besides. And now, you know, there kind of just isn't any of that. You know, anything that we can do, obviously fostering social behavior has always been part of our mission, right?
Right.
Bringing people together. You were talking about your enemies at the pub quiz before. You know, those people are as much a part of your family as the people that you're actually playing, you know, with on your own team every week. And, you know, you're all sort of enjoying this communal experience.
And I never see them anymore. And I look back on that phase of my life with fondness. You know, I'll see them pop up on Facebook or whatever. And I go, oh, man, remember when we were playing quiz a lot? That was a fun phase of life. And talking to you, I'm like, I got to get out and do this more often because to your point, and I'm going to speak in generalities here, but my wife and women in general, I feel like are better at connecting with each other in real life than men are, just in a vacuum. I will say that as my opinion.
All right.
I would think, so what I did was my wife got the moms together of my daughters in school. She's got all, you know, this group of friends. And so she's like, I have crafts for them. We're going to have brunch. We're going to have cocktails. We're going to have everyone get together here. It's going to be really fun. I go, why don't I do this for dads? And so I just decided to do it. And I go, okay, we're going to get together. We're going to eat queso. We're going to listen to vinyl. We're going to have a couple of beers. And all our daughters can come over and have fun. But it's going to be a dad group. And so it felt weird for me to do that. It's much easier for me to be like, hey, do you want to go play pub quiz? Because all of a sudden, it's not like, you know, we're going to connect and we're going to be friends. And I don't know if that's just me personally, but that's sort of an awkward feature of masculinity. Whereas what you're talking about is bringing people together. It's like, hey, do you want to go play pub quiz? It's like, okay, yeah. Do we have to talk about our feelings? No. Then perfect. Yes, let's go do this. And maybe some feelings come up as a result of that, and that's good.
Sure. You know, I'm not sure what there is to that theory about, you know, women being better at it or not. But I will say that most any time that you see like a solitary kind of trivia experience, you're going to find that the audience is usually by a pretty wide margin majority male.
Sure.
And Geeks and Drink audiences are not that way at all.
No.
They're slightly majority female, as a matter of fact. So whatever it is, you know, we're glad for it because, again, good trivia is for everyone. And, you know, that keeps us dedicated to that mission as well. So
I remember one thing talking to. So when we did this 9 years ago, I did a series of 4 episodes on Geeks Who Drink. I interviewed a team. I interviewed a quizmaster. I interviewed you, who were chief editor at the time. And then I interviewed Dicker, who at the time was running the company. And one thing that came up again and again, to have a good pub quiz team, particularly when it comes to Geeks Who Drink, is you need like a diversity of knowledge, a diversity of backgrounds, a diversity of taste. And so because the questions cut across gender, they cut across age, they cut across life experience. And my question to you is, as you're assembling your team, is that something that you look for as you're creating an editorial team so that you create a well-rounded quiz?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Like it's vitally important. You know, especially as some of us old hands become older hands, to make sure that we're, you know, replenishing our writers' ranks from closer to our target demographic. And, you know, absolutely, you know, everything from, you know, female writers, writers of color, LGBTQ plus, you know, what you can't do is, you know, hire a person of color and say, all right, so you're going to write our questions about diversity.
Yeah.
Right?
You can't do that.
Yeah, exactly. So you've got to have, you've got to put together the best mix of people you can and let them write about whatever they want to write about. And, you know, that's how you get authentic perspectives.
Sure.
Rather than trying to pigeonhole somebody.
So as I sit here, I'm 42 years old. A game I like to play with my friends is we'll look at a music fest poster and we see who can get the furthest lines down while still recognizing someone, right? Yeah. Because, you know, eventually you start to age out of popular music demographics. And sure. So, you know, for you, in terms of, you said you sit comfortably outside the age of the target kind of geeks who drink right. Player. It can't be all questions about bands from, say, the 80s and 90s, right? So
yeah,
I would be very challenged to write about modern hip hop or modern country. Whereas, you know, I could write questions about outlaw country, you know, Johnny Cash, Waylon Jennings, that kind of stuff. But I couldn't write you anything about any of the current crop of country music stars.
Yeah. And, you know, of course there are, you know, any number of, you know, references you can use to keep up on it a little bit. And, you know, same as any other topic that you sure. don't know much about.
If you're but, a pro, well, yeah, 100%. I get that.
Yeah. But at the same time, you know, it was fairly early on that we kind of developed our formula, our bell curve for the audio round specifically, because, you know, obviously we don't ask about music that often because we have this yeah. whole 16-point audio round. And if you're trying to pitch it for when our average quizzer was, you know, like in middle school or, you know, right around there, which is like the height of when you're plugged into yeah. those numbers keep getting higher, and it's incredibly distressing for centennials to see that. Like, really? So our average quizzer at this point was 13 in 2007.
Gross.
I know. Yeah.
Yeah. Born in 1994. Yeah. Okay.
Thankfully, you know, the Billboard charts, they have a lot more sure. information online than they used to. No matter what, you have to pitch it toward also, as much as you can, songs that made it out of the radio.
Yeah.
You know, right? Songs that became part of the zeitgeist in whatever reason. I was just writing today for Questionist, our new trivia website, an essay about the Cupid Shuffle, which is actually from the year 2007. It never rose above number 66 on the Billboard chart, but it did sell 5 million copies, digital copies. And, you know, of course, anybody who's been at any gathering of people in the 17 years since then has, you know, been subjected to that song and its accompanying line dance. That's a perfect song for that we would play in that yeah. round. You know, maybe you don't know the title of the song or the name of the artist, but again, you're not going to be like, who gives a shit? You're going to be like, oh, I've heard this a million times. Why can't I think of
yeah,
what
is this?
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly the sweet spot for us.
Yeah, the one of the best and worst aspects of playing pub quiz is the self-flagellation.
Oh, absolutely.
So where you're just torturing yourself going, I had a friend who to this day I think is upset that he wrote broadcast news when he meant to write network. So
yeah, I can see that. Or, you know, oh wow, we've gotten deep into this interview without mentioning Jeopardy. It's kind of a running joke around the office. But after my Jeopardy experience, people would often want to play me a Trivial Pursuit, but it would be like everybody in the room against Christopher, right?
Sure. Well, yeah, I mean, six-time Jeopardy champion. Yeah, of course.
And I'm thinking, I mean, here's the reality of that. It's way easier to play 10 people than it is to play one person. Because every single time...
What are you, Andre the Giant and the Princess Bride? Like, I haven't fought just one person in so long.
Well, no, but it's because, you know, the crowd is less reliable. Like, invariably, somebody will throw out the right answer, and then everybody else will talk them out of it. And that absolutely is a big part of the psychological component of a pub quiz. You know, it's not just the person who didn't get any questions all night, except they finally asked something about, you know, whatever obscure movie they saw that nobody else saw.
Yeah.
But it's also the converse of that, you know, the agony of being the person who said, you know, that's not right. And then it turns out to be right.
Yeah, that's why when we were playing regularly, our team had a rule where everyone got a veto, where if they felt yeah. super strongly about something, it's like, no, it's got to be this. They would get that veto. And if they were right, they got to keep the veto. It's almost like the challenge system in the NBA. And if they got it wrong, it's like, okay, well, you've used your veto, you fumbled it, and sorry, it's over.
That is way more thought than I would have ever put into it, but it sounds like a good system.
I imagine you've been at this for so long. Does this business still continue to surprise you?
Well, of course it does. You know, it surprises me in so many ways, kind of big and small. You know, you really, it's always hard to tell when we're serving one industry as, you know, nigh exclusively as we are. The bar business doesn't necessarily follow the trends of the rest of the economy. And it's really tricky to figure out, you know, if you're in a little bit of a sales slump, for instance, is it because our old pitch isn't working anymore? Or is it because, you know, have food and beverage prices, costs been rising? Of course, coming out of the pandemic, there was that whole thing where places were literally just shutting down most of the week because they couldn't staff it. Every day always has surprises like that, you know, and sometimes they're pleasant. I mean, you know, we had a lot of venue growth. You know, I talked about talking to our pre-pandemic bars and trying to get them back into the fold. But, you know, if you look at the customer base that we had by, for instance, the end of 22 or 23, you know, it was a fairly small nucleus at that point. It was pre-pandemic business. We were just growing by leaps and bounds, and a lot of that was new business. And it's just like, okay, it's good to know that people's appetite for trivia hasn't, you know, gone down over the course of the pandemic. Again, we'd already seen anecdotally that our audience was staying with us, but you know, there was still a hunger for it out of there. And again, the nice thing about coming into this role at a time, you know, a role that I'm not familiar with, at a time that nobody knows what's going to happen, is that truly everything's a surprise. And all you can do, and I've been very fortunate to be able to do it, is surround yourself with just the smartest people you can and know that whatever happens, they're going to figure it out.
That's awesome. Okay, as we wrap up and geeks going forward, where do you see it going forward? What if we were to talk again, hopefully not, you know, 9 years from now.
9 years from now, yeah.
But if we were to talk 5 years from now and you were to look back and say, you know what, that felt really good. We were really successful. We did what I hoped we would do. What would that look like to you?
Well, you know, for sure, we would wind up getting back to and surpassing our pre-pandemic number of clients. That's a big thing. That's, you know, the easiest scoreboard to keep track of. And, you know, there's a little bit of competitive nature in me. I want to do better than the person who founded the freaking company.
Sure.
You know, that would not feel bad. For sure, I also, and this has been, you know, foundational really for my tenure, is this idea of getting out of bars also and getting, you know, getting more brand recognition, you know, getting more voice recognition. We love our bars. We'll always, I can't anticipate really a time that the bar business would not be the vast majority of our business. But at the same time, I know that our brand and our voice can do more than that, you know, and the more people, you know, to know us is to love us. That's always been true. And so having that artificial gate of being in a bar on a weeknight is, it's an artificial gate. And what do we do with those?
Sure. That makes great sense. When we connected again over Facebook after I saw Thrice going, and you said, hey, would you be interested in doing this again? I said, absolutely, because you're right. To know this company is to love it. If you have experience with it, it's fun. It's infectious. It's addictive. It's terrific. It's a great product. So, Christopher, as we wrap up, where can people find Geeks? Anything you want to plug, please do it now, and I will link to all of it in the show notes.
Well, naturally, you're going to find all of it at geekswhodrink.com. And we also have, you know, active social media channels, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, all that kind of stuff. But yeah, you can find your local quiz there. You can find, I mentioned the blog Questionist. That's right now updating daily. We do some actual news from the trivia world. We have a weekly Jeopardy recap, for instance, by the fantastic Andy Saunders from the Jeopardy Fan, and crossword commentary, things like that. We even cover, we covered SporkleCon in our very first weekend. Huh. A direct competitor. You can get to Thrice from there. You know, we don't hide what we're doing.
I would hope not. That would be an extremely counterintuitive business model. Well, I'll tell you what, I will link to all that in the companion blog piece on johnofalltrades.us. That'll also be in the show notes on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your pods. I used to name all these, but like there's a zillion podcatchers out there now. So
if you haven't figured out the one that you want to use by this point, how are you listening to this in the first place?
Maybe you're directly doing it from your browser, you know, listening. I do have people who listen that way, which, you know what? More power to you. I love it.
You're sitting at the desk. Why not?
Christopher Short, it was a delight to catch up with you. You've energized me to go check out my local quiz once again, so I cannot wait to do that. And in whatever you do, however Geeks Who Drink evolves from here, I wish you nothing but continued success.
Yeah, you know, I think I owe you one big sound bite. I'll tack on another answer to your last question, which is Thrice is going to be bigger than Wordle.
I love it. Perfect. All right. Much love. Continued success to you, my man.
Thanks, John.
And that'll do it for episode 365 of the John of All Trades podcast, featuring Christopher Short, Quizmaster-in-Chief at Geeks Who Drink. What a great company. What a great dude. What a fascinating chat. I adore this company. Go out, find a quiz. You know what? You can find all the links in the companion blog piece that's at johnofalltrades.us, in addition to the other 365-plus episodes that I have. I think iTunes only has the most recent 100. Spotify, I have no idea how many they have. But whatever platform you're on, please leave me a rating, leave me a review, hit that subscribe button, brand new episodes will come directly to you. All of those things help John of All Trades with visibility. It feels so good to be back and doing this. I cannot express that to you. I'll just throw that in real quick. The John of All Trades podcast is a production of Deft Communications. Check out Deft on the web, DEFTCOM.US. I'm a professional communicator by trade. Wouldn't you know it, I'm talking into a microphone every single week. But in addition to that, I'm also a skilled writer and campaign strategist. So if you're trying to do something in public, if I don't know how to do it, I will assemble a team that will. So hit me up, J-O-N at defcom.us, D-E-F-T-C-O-M.us. All right, podcasting. I also produce 6 other shows for clients. In my past, I have brought more than 25 shows to fruition. So if you have an idea, feel free to hit me up. I would love to talk to you. I'm out of here for this week. Stay tuned to the social channels for more John of All Trades content. That's at J-O-A-T pod. We'll find out what's coming down the pike. I'm not exactly sure. I know I have a lot of irons in the fire, and I cannot wait to bring you more. So, until I hear you again, say goodnight, Gracie.
That's good, Johnny.